So the teaching and invitations into practice tonight are on the theme of suchness. In the Pali, the word is tata, and that's usually translated as either suchness or thusness. And you can choose either one, whichever one resonates for you, as a word or in your experience. But it's this invitation into a deep wisdom heart perspective of understanding conditions, and through understanding conditions, the heart resonates. Traditionally, it would be said it resonates with care. And the reason for that is that suchness is sometimes called a subtle characteristic. And I'm sure that most of us are familiar with the three characteristics teaching in Buddha Dharma being anicca, dukkha, and anatta, which translate as impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and not self, not personal. So there are also three subtle characteristics. And the subtle characteristic of dukkha or unsatisfactoriness is suchness. And it brings a kind of deep understanding of conditionality and heartfulness to that understanding that allows us to penetrate and direct experience more deeply into this wisdom lens that we call dukkha, you know, that we call the first noble truth, or the struggle of the second noble truth, or the possibility of the ending of dukkha in the third noble truth. So, opening quote by somebody that I rarely quote, but it fits in here. It's actually from Eckhart Tolle. And so, acknowledging that the teachings of Eckhart Tolle are non-dual teachings, and they're coming from an absolute truth perspective. So it's a two truths world, and a two truths world means an engaging and a dynamic balancing of the relative truth perspective, the personal truth perspective, and the absolute truth perspective. So this quote is more on the absolute side. He said, "Always say yes to the present moment. What could be more futile, more insane, than to create inner resistance to what already is? What could be more insane than to oppose life itself, which is now and always now? Surrender to what is. Say yes to life and see how life suddenly starts working for you rather than against you." This is so much a teaching on the second and third noble truths, actually, as I read it out loud. It's like the second noble truth of the cause of our dukkha, of our suffering, is that archetypal struggle in various forms, that inner resistance to what already is. And when we don't oppose what already is, then there's that possibility of more peace, more freedom, which is an expression of more wisdom and more compassion. Actually, a really simple definition of suchness, just an ordinary kind of way of phrasing it, suchness, experience as it is, as it is. No interference. So that's actually a high bar that he presents us with. And through moments of experiencing that and cycles of experiencing that, it then helps us attend to the relative truth, the personal experience the details of life in this world. So it's not leaving it out, it's supporting that process with wisdom and with heart. And so suchness, being a part of the three subtle characteristics, I'll name those three subtle characteristics in case you aren't familiar. So sunyata in the Pali for emptiness, which is the subtle characteristic of impermanence. In practice, when direct experience becomes more and more and more intimate and attuned with the kind of particulate level of change, it empties out of solidity and it empties out of separateness. And so that's why it's the subtle characteristic. Tata, or suchness, thusness, subtle characteristic of dukkha. So deeply experiencing the fundamental difficultness of being a human being living a life, when it goes down, down, down in that direct experience and it doesn't get lost in the second noble truth reactions to that experience, then what shines through is this suchness, this deep understanding. Yes, it's a first noble truth world and I don't have to fight it. And then that opens up the world of the third noble truth, which still my favorite definition of the third noble truth is from Sylvia. Sylvia Boorstein, peace is possible. Peace is possible. And then the third subtle characteristic in the Pali is this wonderful word, atamayata. It's actually said several different ways. So if you've heard a teacher say it a different way, almost think of it as like different emphasis on different syllables from different lineages, but this is how I was taught to say it, atamayata. And atamayata is pointing into the non-dual direct experience, and it's the subtle characteristic of anatta, of not self, of not personal. And as our sense of solid separate self empties out more and more and more, eventually there's these blurring of the lines between subject and object. And we start to move into the level of intimacy where separation dissolves. It's beautiful. It can also be unnerving if we're not familiar with it, but it's beautiful. So those are the three subtle characteristics. Obviously, each of these is, a whole retreat, multiple retreats. So tonight, we're going to spotlight suchness. And then I'm very happy. I haven't been with y'all since last year. It's been a whole year. But it just turned out in the scheduling, I'll be back on January 12th. And so on January 12th, I thought we could do a little dive into atamayata through the teaching and practice of the Bahiya Sutta, which I'm sure some of you are familiar with. And if you're not, just come on the 12th of January and you'll be familiar. And then, very, very happy that y'all invited me to lead a day-long next year. So that's May 3rd. And for the day-long, we'll take a deep dive into sunyata or emptiness awareness through the main lineage that I teach these days out of southern Thailand. And so it's called Mahasati. And it's practices of emptiness and awareness. And we'll look at the relationship between the practice that's called choiceless awareness and pure awareness, emptiness, essence of mind practice in that day long. So I very much look forward to that. This is actually a theme I've been wanting to explore with you all in particular for some time, but it does need at least a day long to introduce it. So. Now I want to share a quote from Ajahn Amaro, who some of you probably know. He was on the Teachers Council for a long, long time until Ajahn Sumedho, who's the founder of the Western Thai Forest tradition, retired for a time. He's not the abbot of his monastery anymore, but he's certainly back teaching there these days. So he retired as abbot, tapped Ajahn Amaro. Ajahn means teacher. To go back to England and take over the monastery. But before that, he was a teacher at Spirit Rock on the council and co-abbot of Abhayagiri Monastery in Mendocino. And so I had a very long relationship with him, and he mentored me in senior teacher training that I did 20 years ago with Jack and Joseph. And so here's his quote on the relationship between emptiness and suchness. He says, "Sunyata is emptiness. The term derives from saying no to the phenomenal world. No, I'm not going to believe this. This is not entirely real. Tata," he says, "means suchness. It's a quality very similar to sunyata, but it derives from saying yes to the universe. There is nothing, yet there is something. The quality of suchness is like the texture of ultimate reality." So you see why I'm sharing this quote. You know, for those of us who do know teachings and practices in emptiness, it's like the emptiness side is saying no, not no negation, not no othering, but no, I'm not going to entirely believe this as my source of okayness. This is not entirely real the way it's being perceived on a relative level. That's all. It's not negation. It's a shift in perspective. And then suchness, saying yes to the universe, which ties in, of course, with Eckhart Tolle's quote. The texture of ultimate reality. What is that? Well, the texture of ultimate reality includes the particulars of our direct experience with wisdom and heart. It includes the particulars, the details. So I'll do a little bit on conditionality, a little bit on the heart aspect, and then invite us into a couple practices. This not entirely real that Ajahn Amaro is pointing to is relationship with conditionality. I'm not going to believe this. And yet, there are still causes and conditions. Now, I call it CNC for short, causes and conditions. This is a pointing into the inseparability in experience as being dependently originated and empty simultaneously. And causes and conditions, in terms of the two truths, fall under the personal truth, fall under the relative truth. And it's so important that we include causes and conditions and the personal experience, the relative experience, because otherwise we get into what's called a spiritual bypass, where we just go, well, I want to be more awake. I want to be more wise. I want to be more heartful. So I'm just going to start negating and ignoring and bypassing all these things that are messy and don't feel spiritual and whatever. Spiritual bypass. Of course, that term was coined many decades ago by one of our local luminaries who just in the last couple of years has passed on, John Wellwood. And so suchness really includes this conditionality. and with more wisdom, so that we can take care of the conditions of our body and our heart and this world with care and wisdom. So if we look at one of the teachings from the Buddha on conditionality, we can actually plug in themes from our own lives to make it practical and not just a cool teaching from the Buddha. And that's what I would encourage. And some of you will know this one. It's the teaching, when this is, that is. From the arising of this comes the arising of that. It's famous. And so the way we can plug something in for reflection is something happens to us, really anything. We can just choose something that's happened to us in the last week, anything at all. And our internal reaction to that occurrence is that this, and the acting out of that reaction that we have is the that. So something happens, the internal reaction is this, and the acting out is that. So this is just one example of actually reflecting on this teaching. So here's a teaching. When this is, that is. From the arising of this comes the arising of that. When this isn't, that isn't. From the stopping of this comes the stopping of that. Somebody says something that triggers me, and I've got an internal reaction of irritation. And then a few minutes later, I say something that expresses my irritation. Irritation, this, saying something, that. Somebody says something, it triggers me. But there's the stopping, the non-arising of that irritation, right? Or it doesn't grow as much. And so that leads to the stopping of me saying that thing that probably would have been better left unsaid. This is this in practice, this teaching and practice on conditionality. It very much ties in with the two arrows teaching from the Buddha, which I know is a favorite old one in this community. So I won't go through it in detail. The short version of the two arrows teaching is that life shoots us with arrows of the first noble truth. We get sick, we lose stuff we love, we get stuff we don't love. It's all first arrow activity. And then there's our reaction to it. The extra struggle, the extra suffering, that's the second arrow. And the third and the 25th arrow at times. And so with this two arrows teaching, emptiness or a suchness perspective sees that, oh yeah, it's just causes and conditions. You know, the mind does that and the body does that and my partner does that and this societal system does that and it's as it is. That's what it does. And there's no need to shoot a second arrow of struggle, of collapse, of reactive fighting versus standing up, speaking truth. And then with that same process of the two arrows, compassion and the suchness perspective sees, oh, I got shot by an arrow and I care. There's caring. And so there's no need to shoot the second arrow. It's life on life's terms. Oh, this is dukkha. This is difficult. And that suchness, wisdom, heart perspective shines forth with tremendous understanding without needing to struggle or interfere to be okay. So a little bit more about this relationship with compassion and dukkha and the suchness. And this is an image for those of you that images speak to you. It's a traditional image out of the Dhamma with that's a bird with two wings. Some of you will know this one. But we're going to plug in a little bit differently because normally one wing would be wisdom and one wing would be compassion. So we're not negating that, but the wisdom is the wisdom of suchness perspective, and the compassion is the heartfulness of suchness perspective. And then there's this question about the body of the bird. And you know, when I think about it, I actually think that I might have first heard this teaching of what the body of the bird might represent, when I was teaching with our friend Donald, like years ago, probably 20 years ago. I believe I first heard reference of this from him. And so the way that I remember the context of the reference of the body of the bird is that it came out of a group of Buddhist activists in Vietnam during the period of time that they called the American War, that we call the Vietnam War. And so Buddhist activists in wartime, in their home country, on their sacred land that they call home, and putting it on the line on every level for peace. And so the way I remember the story was, you know, they were working, of course, with Buddhist teachings to support the resiliency to keep showing up in all ways. No, body, systemic, no, heart. And that they came up with that the body of the bird that allows that wisdom and compassion to fully fly is courage. And the root of the word courage is this heartfulness. So we've got wisdom and compassion that fly through the courage. Takes so much courage, I feel, to be a human being living a life. I feel it takes so much courage to be living and loving and seeking truth and transformation in this world as it is. Takes courage and suchness. So, in terms of a couple practices, few practices, in addition to those I mentioned during the guided meditation, actually, maybe I'll start with one of the ones I did mention in the guided meditation because there's an expansion to this teaching invitation into practice from Ajahn Sumedho. And so, as I said earlier, for Ajahn Sumedho, with suchness practice, awareness with a capital A, suchness practice, something will happen to him in direct experience. Whether it's an emotion, a thought, a sensation, something in the environment, something's happening. He also practices like this in daily life, and it's a wonderful one for daily life. Something happens, and his first response is to say to himself, "It's like this. It's like this." And then there's the hand gestures for those of us who are supported by somatic and energetic practice. And this hand gesture really opens up that field of suchness because it's a hand gesture where you literally open your hands, palms up. It's open, it's spacious, it's pregnant with possibility. And this is the gesture he always uses that I'm sure many of us have seen, many of us use all these years since he first taught it. It's like this. So maybe we could all just close our eyes for a moment so that, you know, nobody feels looked at. And just check out something that's happening in your direct experience. Anything will do. And feeling into this internal phrase, it's like this, and maybe adding the hand gesture and seeing if that enhances a sense of acceptance with conditions as they are, and the inviting forward of the heartfulness. Just try it on with a couple direct experiences for you. And then weaving that into a second somatically supported possibility. What if we call up the body of the bird, the wings of the bird, the wisdom, compassion, the courage? For some of us, it'll be calling up the image of the bird because we orient more to images. But for some of us, it'll be like a somatic sense. It could be each arm as one of the wings, wisdom and compassion, and the whole core of the body being this courage of the heart. It could just be inviting those qualities through this body in this moment and seeing how that calling up of these qualities flies through the system. Or not. Maybe we could open our eyes and do the nervous system orienting practice again, looking around a little bit. But with the suchness lens. So, as you see an object in the room that you can recognize and identify, you go, oh, yeah, that lamp is so lampy. That book is so booky. It's just like a book, due to causes and conditions, that's like in parentheses. Just looking around with the sense of the details of the suchness of conditionality expressing itself. And does the heart kind of come forward to blend with that? The openness, acceptance, it's like this. The nice thing about a practice like that is it does two things at once. It opens the wisdom and the heart, but it's also settling the body and the nervous system through looking around and making sure that we're oriented so that as the wisdom deepens and the heart opens further, if the sense of self starts to get a little bit like, uh-oh, am I going to be okay if it's this open and this deep? Then the nervous system practice of the orienting is actually supporting that depth. Because the nervous system fundamentally is about survival. It's a deeply, deeply conditioned system. So it brings them together in just a really ordinary practice that we can do anytime and nobody will know we're doing it. We don't have to be weird about it. We don't have to be like, slowly looking around. We just sort of glance around and go, oh, yeah, the door handle. Yep, just as it is. And then we look around somewhere else and no one knows what we're doing. Stealth Dharma, I call it. One more possibility. that literally came from out of the practice that I was teaching the rest of today. So remember, I told you today it's been a full day of teaching, and I taught a whole day long on awareness and emptiness, and then was working with some people individually on similar themes who were in self-retreat. And so of all the dialogues that happened on these themes today, somebody said something that I hadn't thought of before, and it totally lit up for me, and I want to share it with you as another possibility into suchness practice. And it's the relationship between suchness and intention. And so what this person was doing in their practice, they've been working a lot with intention lately. And so bringing the two together, what they did is they would set an intention for, some activity, something. And it was a setting of intention, which is basically like the image traditionally is stringing the bow and the arrow and letting the arrow fly is setting our intention. We don't run along beside it going, go left, go right, stop. We just let it fly. And so in that spirit of setting the intention and letting it fly, then they said, I just let it fly and trust suchness. And then they said, what that is for me is I let that intention fly and then trust the unfolding conditions. I thought, oh yeah, that's it. It's so simple. So simple, but very practical and easy to use. Closing quote from Ajahn Chah, Thai Force tradition. It's actually quite a long quote, so I'm just choosing which part to share. So he's talking about letting go. And he says, whenever there's any feeling of clinging, we can let it go because we know that that very feeling is just as it is. That's the suchness perspective, just as it is. He says, he had a real sense of humor. He said, it didn't come along especially to annoy us. We might think that it did, but in truth, it is just that way. Just that way is another expression of it's like this. He says, if we start to think and consider it further, that too is just as it is. If we let go, then form is merely form, sound is merely sound. Odor is merely odor. Taste is merely taste. Touch is merely touch. And the heart is merely the heart. The great invitation of tata or suchness, of all the characteristics and subtle characteristics, really, is the invitation into release. And through that release, the intimacy, the love, the care. So, thank you. We'll leave it there.